Hey everyone, and welcome back to Brawl in the Family in its current podcasty form. We're doing something special for the next couple weeks. It's the 12 Days of Switchmas! That's right, every day from now up until Switch launch, we're going to give you brand new content that's Switch-related. So we hope you'll enjoy, and we hope you come back and keep seeing all the crazy stuff we have to put up. For today, we're going to kick things off by talking about the Zelda series, since obviously a huge new Zelda game is almost upon us. So here's my top Zelda list. It's top 18 games. So every game in the series, minus Hyrule Warriors and, you know, Link's Crossbow Training, and of course the CDI games, because I don't really count. So without further ado, I'm going to get cracking on this thing. Oh, wait, I should introduce Chris, too. Hey, Chris is here.
Hey, guys. I'm here to tell Matthew where he's right and where he's wrong.
Here we go. Yeah, of course. All right, so starting with the bottom tier, we have number 18, Spirit Tracks. Yeah, guys, this one just didn't do it for me. It took me a long time to finish, and largely it's because of the dull overworld, the unpleasant controls, there's a long, boring opening, and there's very little in the way of exploration. By the end of Phantom Hourglass, I was pretty much done with DS Zelda. I will say that the music's really good, but I think the controls in particular just were extremely frustrating, especially when you're guiding Zelda at the same time.
And would you say that these were the worst controls of any Zelda game?
Yeah, I think by a pretty wide margin, actually. Because I can't remember any other Zelda game where I've had so much trouble doing just fairly simple tasks. Number 17, Four Swords on the Game Boy Advance. I'm still not sure if that counts as a real Zelda game or not, but I guess Four Swords Adventures and the Anniversary Edition kind of solidify it as one. Four Swords, you know, it's fine, but it's pretty light on content of its own. It's a fun multiplayer game, but every now and then it's a little tedious to kind of get around. The level design's not amazing or anything. It made a good side mode in Link to the Past Game Boy Advance. It's pretty fun with buddies. I rank it a 7.5 out of 10.
But the game obviously comes with Link to the Past, which is a great game.
Well, yeah. I'm counting Four Swords by itself in this case.
Gotcha.
It's a little tricky. It was like a kind of a separate side game, but then they came out with a sequel to it, so Most Zelda lists I've seen consider it its own game as well. Number 16, Phantom Hourglass. I think this is better than Spirit Tracks, mainly because it felt much fresher. The Temple of the Ocean King and the stylus controls were experiments that I didn't really, didn't love, didn't really work that well. But I did like the map making and the notes and some of the clever puzzles. It tried a few new things and it worked okay. I give this a 7.9 out of 10.
Like Mario Kart.
Yes, like Mario Kart Double Dash, or IGN vets will remember that whole debacle. Next, we enter the low tier. Number 15, Triforce Heroes. This game has some genuinely great experiences when it works. When it kicks you out, it's ridiculously frustrating, especially after you've been playing for 40 minutes and you're just up at the boss and then someone disconnects or the server explodes or whatever. The writing and the general vibe of the world in this game is kind of bottom tier for Zelda for me. It's a little silly, it's a little internet-y, but when you have the right group, it's awesome. So it gets an 8.4 out of 10 for me.
Oh, that's pretty high.
Yeah. Well, get used to it, buddy. The rest of these games are just going up. It's a great series, you know? All right, so number 14, Four Swords Adventures for the GameCube. It's lots of good fun when you can get all the Game Boy Advances and all the cables and all the TVs and all the friends and all the houses and whatever together. You gotta get everyone together. Single player is just okay. But when you have a big group together, it's a lot of fun. And it's got good music and visuals with a lot of content. So it gets an 8.5 out of 10. Number 13, the much maligned Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. Or NES. This is a genuinely good action RPG on the NES if you evaluate it for what it is. It's a little brutal, but I think it's worth playing through, and I don't know, I'd like to see some follow-up at some point in the future. You know, the gameplay's not as good as your typical Zelda game, but I think, honestly, if this wasn't a Zelda game and it was released as something else, it would have a pretty big cult following. So, it gets an 8.8 out of 10 from me, Matthew.
Everyone loves the traditional Zelda gameplay in 2D and 3D.
So it's hard to stack up to that.
Yeah, it's hard to say, well, we have this other series of Zelda games that are kind of a 2D side-scroller kind of thing.
Oh, you know, okay, you're saying it's kind of a hard sell. If Nintendo released a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they could do like a spiritual successor to it. You know, that's not actually a Zelda game, but it's called like
The Adventure of Dink.
The Adventure of Dink. I think there's actually a game called Dink Smallwood that's a parody of Zelda or something. So yeah. Maybe that's been done. Alright, so let's go to the mid-tier. Number 12, The Minish Cap. This is a fun handheld adventure with some nice memorable moments sprinkled about. It's a little uneven with some tedious bits and forced cameos, like all the flagship Capcom games, but it has a lot of creativity. The Kenstone quest is a little hit or miss. It's a little, a little mindless. You'll go and find someone that is looking for a Kenstone, you'll match it up, and then something opens up. Otherwise, though, this is a good game. It's actually a friend of mine's, one of his favorite Zeldas, if you would believe that, if you can believe it. I give it a 9 out of 10. Number 11, Oracle of Ages. The Oracle games have similar strengths and weaknesses. They deliver a lot of great 2D gameplay, but overdo a reliance on out-of-place cameo appearances, and the stories are fairly unmemorable. Ages tries to deliver a little more in-depth plot, which works out okay at times, but it gets ranked lower due to the time element being a bit more tedious to utilize than Seasons. Great puzzles, though, 9.2 out of 10. And its sister game, Oracle of Seasons, is the next one at number 10. Like Ages, it's fun to replay for its good pacing and solid amount of content, especially when they're together. You got 16 dungeons. To elaborate on that cameo thing, I think it's kind of dumb how these games were like, okay, we have a graveyard, so we need an NPC in the graveyard. Let's make it Dompei. Why not? People love Dompei.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it takes away from the world that they're building. It's like, it kind of relegates it to just kind of these cheap little cameo appearances, even though it makes no sense that these characters would be in this land, you know? Like, why are Malin and Talon here in Labyrinth or Holodrome, like, when they live on Lon Lon Ranch? It's kind of a nitpicky thing, but I don't know. Just come up with some new characters.
Yeah, that really bothered me about it, too. It felt like they were told, hey, here's all the characters from Ocarina of Time. Like, make a game that kind of has all those elements in it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Zelda series can kind of get away with that every now and then with someone like Tingle or Beedle. If you have, like, a couple characters, you're just like, okay, I guess they're reincarnated or whatever. But, I mean, there were 20 characters between these two games that were from previous Zeldas, which is a little much. Otherwise, though, I thought the Seasons gameplay made for a more colorful world and a more unique hook. It gets the same ranking as Ages for me, 9.2. Number 9, Twilight Princess. This is a game with a lot of history behind it. Twilight Princess has got a ton of content. While not all of it is great, it's still an ambitious and compelling game throughout most of the adventure. I appreciated the large number of dungeons, the big overworld, and the gameplay variety like the Bird River thing and the really awesome fishing pond. The story was less good, though. I wasn't as compelled by that. I wasn't really as compelled by the cast. And the instrument samples were janky Kong. I don't know what happened with the music. But, I mean, it's good compositions. But, I mean, by that point, it's like, get Sakurai or someone on here to orchestrate it. I don't know.
Yeah, this is a game that really would have benefited from an orchestrated, like a live orchestration for the soundtrack.
Yeah. That gets another 9.2 out of 10 for me. Number 8, Skyward Sword. Like Twilight Princess, a game of highs and lows. The overworld was kind of linear and small, five spoiled puzzles, and the music compositions, unlike the instruments themselves, weren't all that great. That said, the combat was solid. I liked the more athletic Link. I liked the loot and crafting elements. The Metroid-ish design for the overworld areas, minus the later backtracking, was a lot of fun. I thought Zelda was great. I thought Impa was great. And the Lanayru Desert was really great. So that gets another 9.2 out of 10. You know, I've already... Chris and I... have had a spirited discussion on Skyward Sword already, if you'd like to listen.
We have. Here's a link to it right here.
There you go. And you go listen to that, and then come back and listen to the rest of this list.
Yes.
We'll like you for that. And that brings us into the high tier. And at this point, this is when we get into the super greats, all right? We are in prime rib, prime cut sirloin Zelda territory. What's the best steak? Filet mignon?
Yeah.
We're not in filet mignon territory yet, but we're like New York Strip kind of area. You know, this is good stuff. Okay. Number 7, A Link Between Worlds. By far the most expectation-breaking game on the list for me. I thought A Link Between Worlds was going to be a big, soggy slug of a game, but it ended up being a flippin' gem. A nigh-perfect balance of exploration, action, and storytelling with some daring new gameplay conceits that really paid off, such as the item rentals, the refilling energy meter, and Link's whole wall antic thing. I thought the music was beautiful to boot. My only real gripe is that it piggybacks off of a lot of A Link to the Past, so the exploration doesn't feel quite as satisfying. But regardless, we've sang the praises of this game a lot in this podcast, so I gives it a 9.4 out of 10. Number 6, A Link to the Past. See, now we're getting into the games that weren't just fun, but revolutionary. And I know some people are going to be like, what? That's too low. Because I know Link to the Past has got like this huge following, and that's okay, because it's a great game. A Link to the Past broke some new ground, but later games bested it in a few areas. It doesn't quite have the exploration of the original Zelda game, or the characters and story of stuff like Ocarina of Time or Link's Awakening. But it does deliver a ton of content in a well-designed world that looks and sounds great. This is a rather definitive Zelda game, and I give it a 9.6 out of 10. Number 5, Link's Awakening on the Game Boy. This sneaky game has been worming its way up over the years. The older I get, the better it gets. It innovates the series in all the right ways, bringing in lots of humor and heart that become staples of Zelda afterward. It's not very non-linear, but it's designed in an extremely intelligent way with lots of strong dungeons and a memorable, somewhat labyrinthine overworld. I think this is also the game that introduced the whole between-dungeon little subplots. Like, there's this very specific thing you do between each dungeon, and that became a staple of the series as well. Number 4, Majora's Mask. This weird, daring game took a bunch of risks that really made it stand out. It's got my favorite cast in the series and some truly rewarding side quests. It also delivers a lot of the dark, melancholy, sad, and touching moments. And the dungeons, few in number as they are quite the brain teasers. Now, that said, this game has a dumb, confusing opening chapter that sullies it a bit, but it's smooth sailing from there. Like, really, what was up with that opening thing where you gotta find the fairy and then you gotta find, like, the kids, and you're finding stuff, and it's really confusing and weird, and that's alright. That's alright. The rest of it's really good.
I stopped playing the game for a while just because of that.
Yeah, yeah, I want you to do a quick recap of your experience with Majora's Mask.
Yeah, when I got Majora's Mask, I was coming off Ocarina of Time, you know, I was really riding high on the series, and it totally lost me at the beginning. I played the first, like, part with the Deku Scrub, and I couldn't, you know, beat it. I couldn't figure out how to get to the main meat of the game, so I just stopped playing it for...
You didn't get the Ocarina at the end of the first cycle, right?
Yeah, I didn't get the Ocarina. It was confusing and obtuse, and I ended up just not playing it for another 2 years, maybe, until you talked me into it. You were like, hey, no, go back and play it. Keep playing it.
I sound like Beavis.
Go back and play it. It's cool. It's really cool.
So you went back and played it, and what'd you think?
I thought it was amazing.
Cool. So yeah, that's kind of what happened with Majora's Mask. If you mess up at the first cycle, you pretty much have to start the whole game over because you can't save until you do the thing. I think they fixed that in the 3D version. They kind of tweaked that a little bit, so that's good. Anyway, it gets a 9.7 out of 10 for me. All right, finally, the top tier, the top three. These are the big ones for me. The ones that I love so very, very much. These are the prime. What is the meat I said? Filet mignon? This is the filet mignon of Zelda. Alright, so number 3 is The Wind Waker for GameCube. This is definitely one of my best initial playthroughs with a game ever. Open-ended for the most part, exploration, awesome music and visuals and storytelling, and some stunning revelations under the sea make for an all-time favorite to me. It's too easy, I'll admit that. Puzzles are pretty simple, but that and some sluggish gameplay actions like changing the wind are my only real complaints. This game gets a lot of flack for not having enough dungeons. People say, oh, it only has 5 dungeons. You know, it has 7 dungeons, people. You do 3 at the beginning, then you do the Forsaken Fortress, then you do 2 more, then you do the Ganon one at the end. So 7 dungeons, that's fine. That's a fine number. 9.8 out of 10. Number 2, this is the game. You know, I want to say something first before I get to, well, as I get to number 2. Number 2, Ocarina of Time. I want to say something. Ocarina of Time is getting so much garbage now by all these hipsters, they're like, oh, Ocarina of Time wasn't that great. There's people born in, like, the year 2001 that played, like, all the modern Zeldas and then went back to Ocarina of Time. Oh, what's so great about this? It's like people going back and playing Super Mario Brothers. You know, Ocarina of Time was terrific, and it still is. This game innovated so much, it redefined 3D games. I'm sick of the complaint that it's Link to the Past in 3D. Like, oh, they just took Link to the Past and made it 3D and then called it a day. Like, that's so easy to do. Oh, you know, it's not... It has the structure of getting 3 things, the Master Sword, and then the next dungeons. That's it! That's not that much, people. If you look at the actual way the game flows and how it's built, it's completely different from Link to the Past. You're just focusing on superficial ways that the game is structured, how they build it together, and not on the big picture. Anyway, so here's why Ocarina of Time's great. It innovated a ridiculous amount. It immersed me into its world like no game before. There's lots of content, lots of ambition. It looks and sounds good. It invented the Z-targeting system, which stuck for like 2 decades afterwards. In a series full of high points, great games, industry shakers, and risk-taking that pays off, Ocarina is the creme de la creme, an exemplary title that absolutely deserves its legendary status. This is a game that is mind-blowing, and that a game this mind-blowing would be second to something, to anything, only speaks for the quality of this series. 9.9 out of 10. Chris, what do you think of Ocarina?
I think it's an okay game.
It's alright. It's pretty good.
It's alright. It's alright.
Do you think it's held up, like, okay? Do you think it held up well? Or is it?
Yes, actually. I think that the retrospective criticism it's getting isn't really founded in much fact. I think there's something to be said for the originality of it. The way that they created this 3D gameplay pretty much from scratch, like no other game had done something like that before, and that all the things it did have stuck not only with the Zelda series, but with lots of other series and other games all the way through today. Like, That says a lot.
I mean, would you say that Ocarina of Time is on the same level as something like Mario 64 in terms of creating a new sort of
revolutionary? Yeah. Oh yeah, because before Mario and Ocarina of Time, 3D games in general were kind of difficult to control in. People hadn't really figured out how to design games where it was natural and organic to like move around the environment and target enemies. You know, it could often feel very floaty or imprecise.
Yeah, I mean, even like the Z targeting feature is basically a way to control the camera with one button.
Right.
And make it, you know, and that's very smart design, you know, it doesn't overcomplicate things.
Yeah, whereas in other games like Mario 64, you have to dedicate four whole C buttons to the camera. Mm-hmm. And plus, like, the shoulder button?
The shoulder button had this weird little, like, first person kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, even, like, Mario 64, it had a well designed camera, don't get us wrong. It's just, it's really impressive the way that those two games took camera controls and they made them made this very smart camera system that wouldn't get stuck on things that much, wouldn't, you know, always block your view or whatever.
And in Ocarina of Time, the camera did a pretty good job of staying out of your way as well, because there was less direct camera control in Ocarina of Time, but it was always in the place you needed it to be. There was really very few instances where, you know, it would be locked somewhere where you couldn't see what you wanted to see.
Yeah, and I mean, like, there was stuff like the sword play was all new, that was really cool. There was the auto-jumping mm-hmm. feature was... You know, another kind of risky, unorthodox idea that worked really well.
And I think story-wise, I think it definitely did more than Link to the Past.
Yeah.
This is the first time we see Ganondorf.
Yeah.
Even though he was kind of Ganon-ish, you know?
Yeah.
He kind of turns into Ganon at the end, obviously.
But he's got more of a human characterization.
Yeah, and I think the story elements were done very well. It didn't overdo it, really, with the dialogue and the backstory and stuff. You know, you have a few cutscenes peppered around there. But most of the dialogue is fun with a lot of different characters. The cast of characters is far more colorful and varied than the one in Link to the Past.
Yeah, yeah, the sages. So yeah, great game. And that brings us to the number one game for me. My favorite game in my favorite series is The Legend of Zelda on the NES. I've played this well over a dozen times, and I'll play it plenty more in the future. It's a game that Nintendo got right from the get-go, letting players make a plethora of choices themselves and not bogging them down in tutorials or blocking their advancements into the visible walls. You Switch fans, you know, this should sound pretty familiar to you because Zelda 1 was so revolutionary that the main thing people are excited for Breath of the Wild, is directly based off Zelda 1. That's how smart this game was designed. This series is full of groundbreakers, but none paved a path quite like The Legend of Zelda, which consolidated power-ups into handy multi-use tools that were incorporated into the gameplay in a simple and intuitive way. And there's so many ways to play the game, backwards, swordless, minimalist, and there's a freaking second quest! There's 18 dungeons in this game. That's pretty amazing. I love The Legend of Zelda. I'm going to be playing it for the rest of my life. I give it a 9.9 out of 10.
Only 9.9, huh?
Yeah, only two games get a 10. I'll talk about them later. I don't think we've done a podcast on those yet, but Zelda is still my favorite series. The only thing holding back the original Zelda for me, and probably the reason why I didn't get a 10, is there's a few too many kind of, like, super obscure things, which is mostly forgivable since it was made in 1986, but, there you have it. So that's my list, folks! I know I'm gonna get some people disagreeing with it, because I put Link to the Past too low, put Zelda 1 too high, but, you know, so it goes.
Leave your comments below on what you thought of Matthew's list.
Yeah, that's
and then, after you do that, listen to my list, which will be posted very soon, and I'll have a link here for you. And then you can compare and contrast whose list you like better, and which one of us you think is got their head up their bum.
You know, it doesn't have to be a competition every time. Jeez. But I do want to add, make sure you keep tuning in, because we got content coming for you every day on these 12 days of Switchmas. So thanks, guys, for listening, and we will catch you next time. Who's got their head up their bum? Who's got their head up their bum?